The Jamie Drake Equation, Chapter 2. This week is Space Week in school. Every class is learning all about my dad's mission. When I took the register back to the school office yesterday, I spotted Class 3 making models of the International Space Station out of tinfoil and toilet rolls. Then on the way back to my own class, I bumped into this little kid who was dressed up like a baby alien. I nearly jumped out of my skin in surprise. He was wearing a homemade spacesuit, his face painted bright green with sparkly dealy boppers sticking out of the frizz of black hair. "I know who you are," he said, looking up at me open-mouthed, his eyes wide with wonder. "Your dad's a spaceman." "That's right," I said, feeling pretty cool that my fame had spread all the way to year one. "I'm Jamie Drake." This kid starts jiggling up and down with excitement, his dealy boppers bouncing around wildly. Then he asks me the question I get asked at least 3 times a day. "How does your dad do a wee in space?" Up on the International Space Station, everything is weightless, so my dad just floats around and can even fly like a superhero. But all anyone ever wants to know is how dad goes to the loo. I'm in year 6. This means we get to do all the serious educational stuff about my dad's mission. This week we're learning about alien worlds, interstellar travel and nanotechnology. Right now our teacher, Mrs. Solomon, is writing our Space Week homework on the whiteboard. "Invent an alien." "Is there anybody out there?" Mrs. Solomon asks, turning back to face us with a grin. She points up at the sky outside the classroom window. "Do aliens exist, or are we all alone in the universe?" Sitting next to me, Minty pokes her elbow into my ribs. "Of course they do," she whispers. "I've seen them on YouTube." Minty's real name is Araminta, and she used to go to a posh private school, but then her dad got sent to prison for some big bank robbery and she ended up here at Austin Park Primary. Sometimes I think the police got the wrong member of the family and they should have locked Minty up instead, especially when she keeps poking me in the ribs. I wish I didn't have to sit next to her, but Mrs. Solomon seems to think that we should become friends just because we're both the new kids at school. I don't think so. Minty watches all these crazy YouTube videos made by weirdos who wear tinfoil on their heads. One showed a rubber dummy that was supposed to be an alien being sliced to pieces by these doctors dressed in spacesuits. It was so obvious they're fake, but Minty swore blind that it was a real-life alien autopsy. "This Friday," Mrs. Solomon continues, glancing down as she taps at the laptop on her desk, "Jamie's dad, Commander Dan Drake, is launching a mission to the stars to search for alien life. Let's take a look at this video to find out more about his mission." Next to the whiteboard, the flat screen display flickers into life. There I see a picture of my dad dressed in his astronaut gear, flanked by the rest of the ISS crew. The butterflies in my stomach start to flutter as this frozen picture slowly dissolves to reveal an image of a strange-looking satellite, shaped like a silver ball, flying high above the Earth. Then an incredibly deep voice, like the one that you hear on trailers to the latest blockbuster movies, starts to rumble from the speakers. "From the launch of the first satellite in 1957, the human race has endeavoured to explore every corner of the solar system in which we live. From planetary landings to solar surveys, the knowledge we have gained has helped us to understand our unique place in the universe. Now it is time for the human race to take our next step and begin to explore the galaxy." As the voice speaks, spectacular photographs fill the screen. I see the dusty red mountains of Mars stretching out under a butterscotch sky, Jupiter's swirling storms and the ice rings of Saturn, images of Mercury, Venus, Uranus and Neptune, each world so beautiful and strange. Then these pictures start to speed up, the planets flashing by in a blur of colours, yellow, red, brown, blue and green, before dissolving to reveal a photograph of the Sun. This looks like a blazing ball of fire, glowing red flares arcing from its surface in space. "Our Sun is the only star out of 200 billion stars that make up our galaxy, the Milky Way," the voice announces. "Until now, the great distances between these stars has kept the possibility of interstellar travel out of humanity's grasp. But with the advances in microelectronics, nanotechnology and laser engineering, at last the human race can reach for the stars." The screen fades to black, and for a second, I think the film is finished. But then the camera pans to reveal another satellite in orbit high above the Earth. This one looks like a flower, an array of futuristic solar panels curving to create a spiral of petals in space. At the base of the strange satellite, there's a sleek silver module with an airlock at the far end, the Habzone module of the Lux Aeterna launch platform. "Led by Commander Dan Drake," the voice continues, "the crew of the International Space Station are now making their preparations for the final phase of the Lux Aeterna mission. Construction of the orbital launch platform is now complete, and on Friday the 3rd of November at 0800 hours GMT, Commander Drake will use the Advanced Manned Maneuvering Unit to travel from the ISS to the higher orbit of the Lux Aeterna launch platform to perform final checks on the light swarm probes. Each of these nano spacecraft is the size of a postage stamp
and weighs less than a sheet of paper. When Commander Drake fires the Lux Aeterna's 100 gigawatt laser array, the sails on board the light swarm probes will catch this laser beam and then accelerate to more than 75% of the speed of light. Dad told me that Lux Aeterna is a Latin phrase that means eternal light, which is a pretty cool name for a giant space laser. On the screen, a swarm of silver kites floats free from the heart of the flower. Inside the satellite's spiral of solar panels, I see an inner ring of glowing red lights, the launch platform's laser array. As I watch these red lights suddenly shoot out to form a single beam, this red laser light striking the space kites and accelerating them to the stars. Launched on their interstellar journey, the light swarm probes will travel to a star called Tau Ceti. Located 180 trillion kilometers from Earth, Tau Ceti is orbited by a system of five planets, with at least one of these worlds located within the star's Goldilocks zone, where liquid water and life could exist. Strange new planets now fill the screen, worlds of ice and oceans burning blue in the depths of space. Travelling at 299,792 kilometers per second, it takes 12 years for the light from Tau Ceti to reach us here on Earth. At this great distance, it would take a conventional spacecraft 100,000 years to reach this star system. But travelling at near-light speeds, the light swarm probes will complete their journey to Tau Ceti in approximately 15 years. Once there, the robotic probes will use the onboard cameras, sensors, and communication systems to search for alien life, using the same laser pulse technology to beam their findings back to Earth to reach us here in a further 15 years. Thanks to the efforts of Commander Dan Drake and the ISS crew, within your lifetime, the human race might finally discover the answer to the eternal question, are we alone in the universe? As the screen fades to black again, this time for good, everyone starts clapping and cheering. I can't stop myself from blushing, knowing that they're all cheering for my dad. I feel so proud of him, but strangely, I can't help feeling a tiny bit jealous too. Everything revolves around the fact that Dad's an astronaut, where we live, where we go on holiday, and now even my lessons at school. Sometimes I wish I didn't have to share him with the world. Are we alone in the universe? Beaming excitedly, Mrs. Solomon repeats the question. That's what I want you to think about, Class 6. Turning back to the whiteboard, our teacher takes aim with her laser pointer to underline our homework task. Invent an alien. Imagine the planets the light swarm probes might discover orbiting Tau Ceti. What strange alien creatures could they find there? For your homework, I want you to invent your own alien species. Think about the kind of world that it's from. Does this have jungles or deserts? Or might it be some kind of water world? How will this affect the type of alien that you invent? Will it need tentacles instead of arms and legs like you and me? Maybe it could fly like a bird through clouds of ice and dust. Use your imagination to answer the following questions. Where will this alien live? What might it eat, and how could it communicate? Everyone starts talking at once, the whole class bubbling with excitement about the idea of dreaming up their own alien life form. Minty turns to me with a quizzical look on her face. So what will your dad do if he meets an alien up there, she asks. Has he got some kind of ray gun to blast it to bits before it starts eating him? Aliens just love the taste of human flesh. Feeling kind of grossed out, I quickly shake my head. My dad's not going to Tau Ceti, I tell her, speaking slowly to make sure Minty understands, seeing as she seems to have completely missed the point of the video. He's just going to do a spacewalk to launch the light swarms. They're the one that are heading to the stars in search of alien life. Minty pulls a face like I'm the stupid one. Yeah, but that doesn't mean some Martian won't fly past your dad on his spacewalk and make a meat feast pizza out of him. As you can see, Minty is seriously annoying. My dad's on the International Space Station, I say, not the menu of some intergalactic Pizza Hut. I'm just about to add that Martians don't actually exist when our teacher claps her hands together. I'm so pleased to hear that you're all so excited about your homework, Mrs. Solomon says, raising her voice so she can be heard above the hubbub. And I look forward to seeing your presentations about the weird and wonderful aliens you've invented on Thursday. If you like, you can even dress up as your alien creation. But right now, we need to practice another essential skill that all astronauts need. She turns back to the whiteboard, rubbing out the homework task and writing the word equations there instead. It's time to revise for your maths test tomorrow. Everyone groans, including me. It's true, you do need to be a total maths genius to make it as an astronaut. That's why I always get my dad to help with my maths homework. But since he went into orbit, my marks have taken a bit of a nosedive. I mean, we get to chat on the phone most days and have a family video conference once a week, but I don't want to waste this talking about sums when dad's floating in space. As Mrs. Solomon hands out the revision sheets, I look down at the list of equations with a sinking feeling. I wish Dad was here to help me. Chapter 3. After lunch, Mrs. Solomon gets us assessed out our theory of gravity in the gym by dropping balls from the top of the agility tables. It's like an experiment this old Italian guy called Galileo did when he dropped cannonballs off the Leaning Tower of Pisa. She gets us all lined up holding different types of balls, basketballs, cricket balls, tennis balls and golf balls. She says that even though you might think that the heaviest balls will fall fastest and hit the ground first, gravity accelerates them all at the same rate, so the balls all hit the ground at the same time. That's the theory anyway, but then Minty pulled a ping pong ball out of her pocket, and when we dropped all the balls at the same time, Minty's ball hit the ground after everyone else's. Mrs. Solomon said this was because the ping pong ball is very light, so it was slowed by air resistance, but I just think the theory of gravity doesn't work when Minty's around. Stepping out of the school gates at the end of the day, I hear the beep of a horn. Turning around, my heart sinks when I see Grandad Neil waiting to pick me up instead of Mum. He leans out the driver's window of his van. "Come on, slow coach," he yells. "That lollipop lady says I can't park here." Dressed in her luminous yellow jacket, Mrs. Bagwell shouts angrily back at Grandad. "No, you can't. You're a danger to the children crossing. You shouldn't even be allowed on the road in that thing." Back in the 1980s, Grandad used to be the lead singer of a band called Death Panda until a problem with his ears forced him to retire. He still drives around his old tour van, and through the windscreen I can see Charlie crammed into her car seat in the back, waving an inflatable guitar above her head. But that's not what the lollipop lady makes toots at as she glares at Grandad's bad parking. It's the huge mural that's painted on the side of the van. This shows a cartoon of a panda riding on the back of a nuclear missile that is heading straight for the sun. It's a pretty eye-catching picture. This is the front cover of Death Panda's first album. Global warming? This means war. As I reluctantly climb inside the van, the rest of my class streaming out of the school gates, I hear Aaron Johnson shout, "Nice wheels, Jamie!" Everyone starts laughing. I duck down in the passenger seat to try and make myself invisible, but this doesn't work as Charlie just starts bashing me on the head with a blow-up guitar. Still leaning out the window, Grandad just raises his fist in the air, his index finger and little finger extended to form the sign of the horns. As he salutes the school with his heavy metal hand gesture, I sink down further into my seat. "Do you want to give any of your friends a ride home?" Grandad Neil asks, flicking his long grey ponytail back as he squeezes his stomach behind the steering wheel. "There's plenty of room." Fastening my seatbelt, I quickly shake my head. Having a dad who's an astronaut is really cool, but Grandad is a serious embarrassment. "No, it's okay. I just want to go home." "Right you are then." With a shrug of his shoulders, Grandad turns the key in the ignition. "Let's hit the road." A tsunami of noise erupts from the speakers, almost drowning out the engine as it roars into life. I quickly jam my fingers into my ears, trying to block out the worst of the sound. In the back, Charlie squeals with delight, whirling the inflatable guitar around her head again as a thunderous sound of Death Panda rings out. The van lurches away from the pavement, the lollipop lady flattening herself against the school gates as twin guitars squeal from the speakers. Glancing back in the side mirror, I can see her angrily shaking her stop sign before Grandad turns a corner and she disappears from view. Home for us is actually Grandad's house. Before Dad was an astronaut, he was in the RAF, and we just used to live on whichever Air Force base he was posted to. Mum and Dad never got round to buying a house. Most of the time, they just rented a studio for Mum, where she could make her sculptures and stuff while we lived in a family quarters. We moved a lot anyway, as the plane's dad flew got bigger and bigger. I went to 3 different schools before I was 8 years old, as he learned how to fly helicopters, spy planes and fighter jets. Then Dad decided he wanted to become an astronaut, and that was when we really started to rack up the air miles. Most of his basic astronaut training took place in Germany, and I had to go to an international school in Cologne. Then there was underwater training in Florida so that Dad could learn how to survive in an extreme environment, while I tried out the high G rides at Disney World before we headed to Moscow, where Dad learned to spacewalk and I learned that I don't really like Russian food. That was where Charlie popped out, so her birth certificate says she was born in Star City. This is the name of the place near Moscow where all the astronauts and their families live while they're finishing their training. My birth certificate just says I was born in Swindon. So anyway, after Dad blasted off the International Space Station, Mum brought me and Charlie back home to Britain, and we moved in with Grandad Neil. I don't know why we couldn't get our own house, but Mum said that Grandad would help look after us while she got back to work. I told Mum I didn't need any looking after, but we still moved into Grandad's house. He bought it when he was big in the 80s, and since Grandma left him and moved to the States with her new boyfriend, he's been living there on his own. Now Mum's turned her old attic bedroom into an art studio, and is up there most of the time working on her new sculpture. She's in the kitchen when we get home, though, drinking a cup of tea in her paint-smattered smock. Charlie runs towards her with a happy squeal, shrieking with delight as Mum scoots her up and spins around in the air. "I'm a spaceman!" she cries. Mum rolls her eyes. "You mean spacewoman," Mum says, as she brings Charlie back down to Earth. "Don't forget, girls can be astronauts too." Then she gives me a smile as I shrug my rucksack off my shoulders and set this down on the kitchen table. "How was school?" she asks. "Fine," I reply, pulling out my homework folder. "I've just got to revise this math test tomorrow." From the back garden comes an ear-splitting squeal of feedback, and my shoulders sag as I realise what this means. Even though Grandad's rock star days are over, he still likes to go out to the barn to play his guitar. Very, very loud. There goes my chance of revising in peace. Seeing the pained expression on my face, Mum quickly shakes her head. "Don't start revising now," she says, raising her voice as the sound of crunching guitar chord rings out and Charlie starts dancing around the kitchen. "Why don't you get some fresh air first? I'll make sure Grandad finishes practicing by 6 and you can pick us all up some fish and chips on your way back." Mum pulls a £20 note and pushes it into my hand. Grateful for the chance to escape, I quickly shove it into my pocket along with my revision worksheet. As a deafening harangue of another guitar chord shakes the kitchen window, I head for the door in the one place where I'm guaranteed some peace and quiet.